Welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd, and you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_BBall. Today's episode, it's going to be a Fantasy Hoops mailbag, and to open all your letters, couldn't do it alone. I am joined by the main man of fantasy, Matt Smith. Welcome.
Josh, how's things?
Yeah, very, very good, Matt. It's good to have you back on the show. And we're not only welcoming you back to the show, welcoming all the listeners to the show and everyone watching live on YouTube and everyone listening through the Hardwood Paroxysm Network. Thank you for listening to the show and checking us out, and I hope you do enjoy it. And if you do enjoy the podcast, head across and subscribe and leave me a review on iTunes. And I've called for this occasionally. Just go out there and smash iTunes. Everyone just go and leave a review. Just get a massive amount pushing through. It only takes 5 minutes of your time, and it does really help the podcast immensely. Matt, this is the dead part of the NBA season, but we're always still talking NBA stuff, reading stuff, working things out. There's always something happening. We're in a dynasty mock draft at the moment. We're organizing leagues. There's a whole bunch of stuff happening, so it never really slows. It slows down a bit, but it never really stops for us. And I believe you were jumped onto another podcast over the last day or so. Do you want to give that show a plug?
Yeah, I did. I cheated on you. Sorry about that. I was on the Sack Kings Nation podcast. They do obviously podcast based around the Sacramento Kings, but they're trying to get some fantasy flavor into their show as well. So I was on there about 7 hours ago, my time. So I believe if it's not already up, it will be up. Chatting to Joe Morgan. So yeah, check that out. It's just sort of talking about the rookies, some of the off-season moves, my top 10 for this coming season. So just a fairly general, fantasy podcast in terms of what's been happening this off-season. And yeah, we'll do another one closer to the season and a few throughout the season as well. So no, it's a good chat.
So Matt's broadening his wings and horizons, and you're going to find him basically on every podcast in the world soon as he spreads out and takes over the fantasy landscape. Now, Matt, we are here today to do a fantasy mailbag. We have got a few of your questions came in, and we're going to tackle as many as we get to in this time frame. There's some very interesting questions that came in, and I think that they'll provide a little bit of a discussion points for us throughout the night as we go through and look at all these. The first one, let's just start off with it's not really a question, but I think it's something we need to mention, and it came through from Owen Daly on Twitter, and he just has almost a definition question. He just says, by the way, when you guys say, I have him lower, do you mean less valuable? Because lower obviously can mean two different things. Do you mean a lower number, like 5 is lower than 20, or less than 20? Or do you mean lower down the list, so like a guy ranked 50 is ranked lower than a guy ranked 20th? Matt, when you say I've got him lower, how do you mean that? Just to avoid any confusion.
Yeah, just to clarify, so 50 for me is lower than 20. So if we say 1's at the top, 200's at the bottom, and that's the way I generally sort of talk about ranking. So yeah, if I've got Giannis ranked at 30 and you've got him ranked at 50, then I've got him higher than you going up on the ranking. So hopefully you're on the same page and that clarifies it for everyone.
Yep, exactly. So it's always basically you're looking at like a ladder, basically number 1's on the top rung and everyone down. They're all one rung below, so they're all lower. So the top is the top of a ladder, and it's just down that way. So lower is less valuable. So you knocked it on the head, but I can see how there could be some confusion there. But hopefully we've straightened that out now. Now onto the next question where we can really sort of sink our teeth into. Matt, it comes through from Jeff Padre on Facebook, and he says, Josh and Matt, who do you think will be the best sixth man or bench players that will produce starters-type stats? And which ones will be useful in fantasy? Matt, I'll let you kick it off first. Give me a couple of names who you think are guys that we project will be bench players, but will have those sort of stats that will be equivalent to a starter and are going to be useful in basically all sort of fantasy leagues.
Yeah, I've got a few guys here. The first obvious one that came to mind was Isaiah Thomas at Boston. We don't know whether he'll be starting or coming off the bench, but if he does come off the bench, he's still looking at sort of somewhere between 25 and 30 minutes. I think he was around 26 last year, yep. There with the Celtics under Brad Stevens. So he's obviously probably the main guy that once he gets sort of the 25 minutes, he's putting up pretty reasonable numbers. So I'd expect something similar from him if he does come off the bench. The other guy, I think he'll start at power forward. but we're still to be determined. We'll find out during training camp and off season. That's Nikola Mirotic of the Bulls. Josh, while we're there, what's your thought on the Bulls front court? I know you've been a little bit confused, not sure which way they're going to go. I think they'll start Gasol and Mirotic. What are you leaning?
I am thoroughly confused with what they're going to do. I think that they will. I was going to say, yeah, I think they'll start Mirotic and Gasol, but now I think about it again, I don't know. It's going to be hard to put Joakim Noah on the bench, not necessarily for his ability to play the game, but more for his ability as a team guy, as the heart and soul of this team. He is the leader of this team. Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler are the better players, so to speak, but Noah is the leader. So maybe they don't start. Maybe they go with Mirotic and Noah as the starters. I really don't know, but I did have Mirotic down as a guy that I think can be a six-man contributor because I just don't know where he's going to be, and just based on what he did last season, I've sort of slotted him into that six-man area. But the Bulls, it's just anyone's guess at this point.
Yeah, I think he'll star, but regardless, he's going to have some pretty good fantasy value. A couple of other guys for me, don't discount Darren Collison there in Sacramento. They could play both Collison and Rondo together. We know Rondo's a loose cannon. He might spit the dummy. He might have a fight with Cousins or Carl. He might just turn
just,
up.
Just quickly, mate. Spit the dummy. Now, sometimes we throw in some Australianisms, some Aussie lingo, and we'll often get a comment, a tweet, an email going, what are you guys talking about? Now, I don't know if this is one of them. I don't know if spit the dummy is something. I'm guessing it is. But do you want
to...
I don't think that helps anyone either. What is spit... the best way of phrasing spit the dummy is throwing a tantrum. Yes?
Yes.
So anytime you would use the term throwing a tantrum, feel free to use the term spit the dummy, because that is a very, very... I think it is an Aussie term, yes?
I think so. I tweeted out a good video this morning of two guys who are discussing Aussie lingo and how we shorten most words, like this afternoon was this arvo. So I might tweet it out again. So if people don't understand us, then watch this video and hopefully that clears it up, because we butcher the English language.
I've tweeted that video out before. I actually did it when I was over at Summer League and I was hanging out with some of the RotoWire guys and they were saying, oh, we saw your video. And then I was just having a conversation with them. I was talking about Australian football, and I was just saying, yeah, when I go to the football, And then after saying it a few times, I couldn't help myself and had to drop footy in there. Okay, yeah, I go to the footy, and they stop me. They go, this is exactly like the video you just tweeted out, that you had to shorten the word. I go, I've been trying so hard to say these words properly, and after the fifth go around of saying football, which sounds so foreign to me, I just had to throw in footy, and then it was, that was all over. So that's my little story on that video, because it is pretty accurate. Some of the words in that video I don't think I've ever used before, but the majority, yes.
And yes, Josh does wear his thongs to the footy, so just to clarify that one. A couple of other guys I've got down. My boy CJ McCollum at Portland, he's going to go nuts off the bench there.
Yeah, I got him.
Paddy Mills is a real sleeper for me. I might talk a little bit about him later on because he ties in with another question quite nicely, but I think he's going to play some pretty solid minutes off the bench there behind Tony Parker at the Spurs. And the other sort of two guys, depending on whether they start or off the bench, are Rodney Hood and Alec Burks there in Utah. So there's probably five or six names just to keep in mind for some of the better bench players.
Yeah, I agree with you on Mills, and he is definitely a guy I'm going to speak about later as well. I only threw out three names, but a lot of those guys that you mentioned there have got significant value. CJ McCollum and Nikola Mirotic. Another guy that very easily could come off the bench is Gorgui Dieng in Minnesota. We don't know what the Timberwolves are going to do. If we expect Garnett and Karl Anthony Towns to be the starters, although Garnett's going to be a starter in name only, not minutes, then Dieng's going to have to come off the bench. So he's a guy that he could come off the bench, play 28, 30 minutes, and still be a really fantasy relevant guy. And there's going to be someone in Los Angeles with the Lakers who's going to come off the bench. Most likely it's Lou Williams, but it could be Clarkson. It could be D'Angelo Russell. One of those guys is going to come off the bench. Don't necessarily know how much use they're going to have all up, and we're going to touch on those guys a little bit later, but someone in Los Angeles has to come off the bench. We don't know exactly the way that it's going to work out now, but there's some sort of intrigue there in terms of those guys. But there are a number of players throughout the league who could come off the bench and have impacts. Jamal Crawford's been a guy like that throughout his career that is a late-round fantasy guy. There's going to be quite a number of players who do that throughout the season, and the term starter is not necessarily the most useful designation because it's all about who's producing and in what role they're doing it. Okay, big question came in, Matt, from David Tong, who emailed it through to me, and you can always email me any questions at redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com. His question is, who do you fear will be a bust this season? The Troy Murphy Award, someone that might be overdrafted based on a previous year's breakout, someone that had a huge breakout, signed a big contract on a new team, different results. And he goes through some of the past winners of this award. Obviously, Troy Murphy, Anthony Randolph, Eric Gordon, Andrew Bynum, Darrell Wright, JaVale McGee, Larry Sanders, David Lee. They're some of the ones he's got there. Now, he says, I have a suspicion it could be Damari Carroll because his situation has changed. Obviously, not the same offensive system. Matt, Damari Carroll's a good answer. Do you have another answer? Matt's not there. Matt's not answering. Are you there, Matty?
I got you.
All right, okay. Now, what's your answer? Who is your pick for the Troy Murphy Award?
I've got a couple of guys down here. Now, they don't really fall into that category of
that's the same as me, signing actually.
Huge contracts. But Lance Stevenson was a bust last year. He's still going to be a bust this season at the Clippers.
Yep.
I think Rajon Rondo's going to be a bust at the Kings, so I wouldn't be drafting those two. Paul Pierce going to the Clippers doesn't really have any fantasy value. Well, he shouldn't, and that was a terrible contract, giving him 3 years. He's going to be 39 at the end of that deal. Ty Lawson as well, I think he'll be a bust in Houston there at the Rockets next to James Harden. He's obviously got some other things to work through off the court. And so he's probably one of those guys going from maybe a top 30, top 40 player down now, sort of to 80, 100 range in terms of drafts and rankings. So Ty Lawson could be a bust. And just a couple in terms of, I think they might be overdrafted. One guy in particular who has been overdrafted in our Red Rock listener leagues and a couple of other mocks that we've done is Paul George. Now, he's been sort of going in the late first round, anywhere between 10 and 15. For me, that's far too early. Just a huge amount of risk there coming back from that broken leg. If he can play probably 70 games, I think he's done well. And I just can't see him being a top 15 or even a top 20 player this season. I'd certainly take guys like Jimmy Butler and Klay Thompson, Kawhi Leonard over Paul George. I don't think there's any reason to risk it that early. And another guy, just one more, who I think will be overdrafted a little bit, who was coming off a great season last year, and that's Pau Gasol. I just can't see him replicating those numbers again this season. And I am concerned about the amount of minutes and games he played last season and whether that'll catch up with him along with his age. So I've just got a gut feeling that Pau Gasol could be in for an injury-riddled season, and that will hurt his fantasy value. So there's a half a dozen guys there.
Well, you're not going to take Pau Gasol where he ended up being ranked, and that was inside the top 15. And I think no one's going to do that, but you're right, he's going to have a significant drop-off. But people might overrate the drop-off a little bit. You might see him drop to the 40s or 50s, and even that's when I would start pouncing on him. But it really depends on how people are viewing him in the league. You're not going to take him. He's not going to be that top 15 guy. Again, I agree with you on Paul George. For him going at the turn in leagues is too early for me. There's other guys that I would much prefer at that point. I've been loud and proud about my concerns about Paul George's leg injury and his ability to come back from it. I'm extremely worried about him being able to come back at full strength. And the same with, it goes with guys coming off ACL injuries that are also maybe getting drafted a little bit higher. Jabari Parker, him going inside the top 100 feels really, really high considering he's probably not going to be back until January. Brandon Jennings off the Achilles, and Tony Roten as well, who's coming back. Now, he's not coming back off a full ACL tear, so there's probably less of a worry there, more of a worry in the fact that he's actually Tony Roten, less necessarily the knee injury, but someone's got to have to play some minutes there in Philadelphia. But the names that I had written down, Damari Carroll's a good one, definitely. But I don't necessarily think he drops off too much, to be honest. I think he's going to be still a pretty solid guy. He was absolutely destroying people in the playoffs. And you look at his numbers through the season, you go, yeah, he's not a big scorer. He does little bits and pieces. But in the playoffs, he was just taking over. He's not that guy. He's not the takeover guy for a whole season. But I think he can be pretty good in Toronto. The two guys that I wanted to mention who were big, big guys in the second half of the year. Jordan Clarkson in LA. Now, I love Jordan Clarkson. I was on him before the season started last year. I've mentioned this story plenty of times, Matty, in a 30-team dynasty league. The only rookie that I took was Jordan Clarkson, and that worked out pretty nicely for me. But I just don't know what's going to happen. He was a top 40 sort of guy the second half of last season. But there's just too many mouths to feed. He did all that without the four other guards who were basically going to be taking the ball and minutes away from him. Kobe's back. Lou Williams is in. Nick Young is back. And then D'Angelo Russell is there as well. And again, we are going to talk about those guys a little bit later on. But he's a guy that I think that might end up getting drafted a little bit too high. I think it's going to be a struggle for him to get inside the top 80, maybe even the top 100. I'll have to wait and see with that. But the main guy that I think is a chance for this award or this category is Hassan Whiteside. He's not the most stable of guys. I think that's fair to say. We saw him with some questionable decisions last season. If you ever want to see a questionable decision on a basketball court, just watch Hassan Whiteside throw the elbow into the back of Kelly Olynyk's head after just charging him down in the middle of the paint, completely out of nowhere. And that's the sort of thing that this guy can do. Remember, this guy's, he's not a rookie. He wasn't an undrafted rookie. He was picked about 4 years ago. Ended up playing in China, in Lebanon, in somewhere else in Europe, because he was basically just a dickhead and he couldn't ever sort of stay focused. And we saw, even in, he played limited time, he was ejected so many times, and then he'd get like random injuries and he'd complain about the injuries, and he'd take a while to get back from the cuts on his hand and all this. It's just lots of things like, I'm sick of hearing about Hassan Whiteside. Yeah, he put up big numbers, but Larry Sanders' potential is there with this guy in terms of having a big season and then being complete nothing. And that worries me a little bit, especially in the place where he goes in drafts. There are other guys who are, you know, solid NBA veterans who can put up pretty big numbers, but are more consistent and more reliable. Because Whiteside, he scares me a lot. He could be massive, but he also could be just a complete pleur. That's the best way I can put it.
Technical terms.
Yeah, I don't even know how to write that down. How do you see it? What do you think on Whiteside? Do you have any sort of concerns with him?
Yeah, I do. I'm in the same boat. Sort of that, even round 3 and 4, I can't do it. It's too early. If you're sitting there in round 6, 7, 8, yeah, sure. But we've seen a snippet of him for, what, 30 or 40 games? What did he play last season? For 48 games. Can he do it for an 82-game season? We don't know. And as you said, he's had issues in the past. I don't know. He might come back. Who knows? So, yeah, inside the top 50 for me, too much of a risk with Hassan Whiteside.
There's definitely risk there with him. All right, let's move on to the next question, and that comes from Tyler Watts, who's on Twitter, at Wattsy4444. What are your thoughts on Mario Hezonja for this year and for Dynasty Leagues? With Elfrid Payton and Victor Oladipo, can he crack 30 minutes in the next few years? Well, Matt, to me, that's the all-important question, because it's not like Oladipo's old. It's not like Payton's old. These guys have played 3 seasons combined. And Hezonja is more of a 2 than a 3, so he's going to try and have to get minutes there. Now, he could easily be the sixth man and play 27 minutes, play 30 minutes a night as a backup there. But he's not going to play backup point. He's not going to handle the ball unless they decide to shift Oladipo there. But from what I've heard, they're trying to transition Oladipo away from playing the point pretty much exclusively, like playing him exclusively as a 2. And that worries me a little bit about what Hezonja is going to be able to do in the next 2 to 3 seasons. They've just signed Tobias Harris to a big deal at the 3, which Hezonja can play the 3, but he's clearly not as big as Harris. So that limits it definitely changes what they can do at that position. So as for this year, I think there's no impact for Hezonja in any standard 10 or 12 leagues. I don't think there's anything that he's going to do, especially for the first half of the year. Maybe we get to January or an injury happens, but I don't think he's doing anything in the first half of the year. And Dynasty, I am concerned because there's no surefire path for him to get minutes. It's not like, yeah, they're going to trade Payton. They might. They're going to trade Oladipo. They might, but it doesn't seem likely. So where's it going to come for him? Are you more optimistic on him?
No, I'm not. In the short term, I think, like you said, he's going to struggle to get minutes. I can see him as a 2 or a 3. The only way he could get minutes early on is if he does really impress, and maybe Tobias Harris has a has a setback with an ankle injury or something else, and they need Hizuni to come in and sort of play that starting small forward role. But to me, he's probably a 3 to 5 year guy. Whether that's at the Magic or whether that's at another team, I think he's going to be a pretty good role player in the league, sort of a threes and steals points kind of guy. But for the first, two, 3 seasons, it's going to be hard for him to get minutes, as you said, because Tobias Harris is only 23 as well. So it's not as if he's coming in behind a Paul Pierce or behind a veteran who is going to be done in the next 2 seasons. All these guys in front of him are young as well. So, longer-term guy for me.
Aaron Gordon's there as well, and he's like 20 years old, and he wants to play some three. He's going to play some four. So it's all well and good. You can say, I throw Tobias Harris at the four and put Hizonia at the three, but Aaron Gordon was extremely impressive in Summer League, and we know they value him highly. They picked him four last year. He's an exceptionally young player as well. So there's got to be minutes there. So the Magic are just stacked with young players. Like, they've got 6 guys who are good players and young players. And you think at some point maybe that boils over to making a trade or whatever it is. But it does limit what Hizonia is going to be able to do in the next couple of seasons, in my opinion, and obviously in your opinion, Matt. All right, we've alluded to this question a bit already. Vivek on Twitter, at VP90244. Who do you think will have a better fantasy year, Clarkson or D'Angelo Russell? And he chimes in with his opinion. Los Angeles has got to play Russell into the ground. Okay, Matt, who has the better fantasy year?
To me, this is really close, actually. I can't see Kobe Bryant playing 75, 80 games. I think if he plays 60 to 70 games this season, he's done pretty well. So when Kobe's playing, he's going to limit both these guys' value. When he sits, they're both going to have a big bump. Now, I'd like to see who they're playing at point and how the rotations are going to work. So we're trying to make a guesstimation here 10 weeks out from the season. I'm going to answer a lot of this. I like D'Angelo Russell more in head-to-head leagues, where I think he's going to get slightly more counting stats, but his efficiency is going to be worse. And that's why, to me, Jordan Clarkson gets that bump in rota leagues, because he'll have the better efficiency and the better percentages. So in terms of rankings, I've got them pretty close at the moment, and I think they'll both be sort of top 80 guys. What do you reckon?
I think that Clarkson will probably nudge him a little bit, just because he just feels a little bit more polished at this stage in his career, which doesn't necessarily mean much moving forward. But for the early part of the season, I think that it will be that case. Now, we just don't know how it's all going to play out, but I do think that Clarkson will be slightly better player. But I think that they'll both struggle to be top 100 players if Kobe plays 70 games. If Kobe goes down again, which is a massive possibility, then both of these guys then become very good. They become top 80. Now, I'd probably put Clarkson even a top 70, top 65 sort of guy, Russell a bit lower. But I think that Clarkson can have the better season. They do love Clarkson over in LA, despite his history as a second-round draft pick. That doesn't matter now. They love him. They think that he is definitely a big future there. And when we get to the start of 2016-17, I think he's going to be a fantastic fantasy asset. I'm a bit fearful, as I mentioned before, of the way that they're going to run things with Kobe around there. But out of those two, if I'm picking one, it's probably Clarkson, and it's not a massive difference between the two. But it's enough for me to make that decision. I would say it's an odd situation in LA. I'll put it that way, because what seems obvious is not necessarily what's going to happen. And remember, they've got the greatest coach of all time there, managing the rotation. So whatever is supposed to happen is not going to happen. And that's pretty much the only thing you can bank on with Byron Scott. All right. Talking rookies, let's head to another question on a rookie here, Matt. Arnizzle on Twitter, at DaWoodman. You don't really hear much about Justice Winslow in fantasy news. Is he worth a pickup with the aging Luol Deng? I'll take this one first, Matty. 10-team leagues? No. 12-team leagues? Probably still no. He definitely wasn't impressive at Summer League. The Heat are built to pretty much win now or in the next season or two. Their starting five is strong. Goran Dragic, Dwayne Wade, Luol Deng, Chris Bosh, Hassan White, sort of given out misgiving on him already. But I don't think they're going to be throwing Justice Winslow out there for big minutes at this point. No, rookies don't get big minutes as a general rule. Andrew Wiggins got big minutes, and there was a great tweet actually by Sam Macy today Matt talking about Wiggins and the fact that of all the minutes that he got, I think he was the least productive player in NBA history for a player who got at least that many minutes in terms of what he was able to do with his stats, which is definitely something that I've been a little bit cautious on with Wiggins of people projecting a big rise, is that he wasn't a great fantasy player last year, even with all those minutes. That's beside the point. He was the only guy who got 30 minutes a game last year. Now, Alfred Payton and Nerlens Noel started creeping up towards that at the end, but they all started off low. So that's... Winslow's not going to do that, especially when there's a guy, a proven veteran there, who, he has been declining, but he's very underrated, Luol Deng, in terms of what he can do in fantasy. He's never going to be a top 50 guy, a top 60 guy, but he's just going to give you that solid 100 to 110 sort of range value, do what he does, and help the team out. And he had to get streaks last year when guys went down, so when Wade would go down and when Bosch would go down, then his production would step up, and it would step up significantly. And that's what he's going to be able to do. They can rely on him. They can't rely on Winslow at this point. They've seen nothing from him where they can say, we can rely upon you in a big situation where they can do that with Deng. Do I just love Deng more than what you do? Or am I just being extremely pessimistic on Winslow? Or do you see it the same way?
Yeah, pretty much the same. And the key point out of that is Miami is still in a playoff-bound team. So they're not a rebuilding team. There's no reason this season to give Justice Winslow 30 minutes. They'll ease him in, probably maybe 15 to 20 minutes off the bench, and it's not going to be enough for fantasy value. Even if Luol Deng does go down with injury, it wouldn't even surprise me if Gerald Green starts in a small forward role. They've got Tyler Johnson there that can play maybe a small forward role as well, more of a shooting guard, but they've got other guys who can do, similar roles and fill those positions. So I wouldn't be, in any rush. And I think what he said, 12-team, 14-team, no. Once we're getting outside the top 200 rankings, 2 to 250, maybe. But even then, what's he going to give you? Maybe 8 points and a steal and, a couple of boards.
Yeah, he's not going to be worthwhile. Like, he'll struggle to be inside the top 200, I think, is probably the best way of putting it at this point. Like, I haven't finalized my rankings yet. I'm still a few weeks away from doing that, but I can't envisage a situation where I'm going to go, Justice Winslow's inside the top 150 and I recommend picking him up, because you'd have to be stashing him for about 3 months, I reckon, to even have anything potential happening. And even then, I think it's still quite a bit of a stretch. So there's probably a reason why you're not hearing much about him, Arnizzle, in our fantasy circles, is because no one really projects him to do a huge amount, especially early on this season. Rest of his career, different story. But at the moment, I just don't really see it being anything interesting for him in terms of his fantasy output. Okay, Matt, where should we go now? Let's head to a couple of dynasty questions. First one comes from, where are we? David Eric Kelly on Twitter @lieutenant_buckets. Okay, in a dynasty, if you could only keep Kyle Korver or Chandler Parsons, which one would you keep? Now, Matt, I'm going to have to get your answer on this, but I'm also going to have to tell you there is only one right answer, so go ahead.
There is only one right answer, and that's my answer, and that's Chandler Parsons.
The crowd definitely agrees with that.
Kyle Korver is going to be an interesting one for me this season. He's actually 34 years old. He's a bit older than what I thought, coming off two surgeries this offseason. We know they've lost Damari Carroll. So even for this season, I think we might see a little bit of a decline. Sorry, I've got bugs flying around the house here. Chandler Parsons, 26. We saw a couple of years ago in Houston, had a great season. I expect a bounce back season from him this year, let alone future seasons. I think they'll play through him a lot more, use him a lot more. That's a pretty clear cut, Chandler Parsons over Kyle Korver.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would agree with you. I would be not shocked if Parsons was the better player this season. The two injuries that Korver's had, the ankle and the arm issue, he's had to have surgery on, are definitely a little bit of a concern. At his age, there's going to be a different role. He's going to be playing alongside someone different. Look, he was great and I love him in fantasy, but I think Chandler Parsons is going to take a step forward this year. Chandler Parsons, remember, does have the option of, he's a player option on his contract for next season, so he could be looking for another big payday as well, so he's going to want to crank things up. And he was really, really good at the end of last season. Now, he struggled a fair bit to start the season, but the second half of the season, he was the 43rd ranked player in Roto League 72, which compares to 90th for the whole season. So he was significantly better in the second half. He is going to be in a bigger role here. He also won't have to deal with Rajon Rondo, so that'll probably help as well. And I think the Parsons can take his game to another level. And I wouldn't be shocked if he was one of those guys who exceeded his ADP in terms of value by 2 to 3 rounds by the time we get to the end of this season. Next Dynasty question comes from Sean Dooley, who's in one of our listener leagues. I can't remember which one, but Sean is in that. I think he's a fellow Adelaide boy, Matt. Is that correct? Do you know?
I believe so, because he drinks Farmers Union iced coffee.
He does. He's a massive Fuick fan. And gets all around those pie floaters. And if you don't know what pie floaters are, they're something that masquerades as food.
Very harsh. Wait till you try a Berliner's. I'm gonna send one over to you.
They look good, actually. I've got no issue with those. They look pretty good. Those Berliners that me, Matt, and Sean were having a discussion on Twitter one day about Adelaide specific food, of which I'd never heard of anything that he was talking about. But they all looked pretty nice. Now onto Sean's question. He's on Twitter at DoolsDog. My first Dynasty auction draft is coming up soon. Is punting advisable or even possible? Matt, we're going to have different answers on this. I'm almost 100% certain. You go first.
Yes, we are. Well, if it's a Roto League, then the straight answer is no.
Agreed.
Yep. If it's a head-to-head league, my answer is still no, because I don't believe in punting. Your answer is going to be yes, because you do believe in punting. The question I'd like to ask you is punting still a valid strategy in an auction draft, and how does that compare to a snake draft? For me, like I said, I've punted before, but I don't like it, and I'm not going to punt in the future. But to me, on the surface, I think punting is a lot harder in an auction draft than it is in a snake draft. How do you see it?
I would disagree. I find that in an auction draft, if I'm punting, it's easier, because I can basically get the guys that I want. And I know where I can spend my money. You would have heard, if anyone heard me do, I did a live podcast as I did an auction draft last year. I had all my guys set out. These are the guys I want. These are who I'm going to spend on, and got every single guy I wanted. And in the end, I had like $15 left over for my last player, and it was Danny Green. I went, someone's going to put out $2 on him. Here's 15, and I just took him. Won that league, and I find that punting with an auction sort of setup is easier, because you don't have to, oh, this guy's going to get picked before me. If I want him, I go and get him. And then I have a list of guys that I want, and I know who I want, and I generally have an inflated perception of them than what other people do. Now, the interesting question here that Sean asks is punting possible in a dynasty? Now, the auction part, great. I think that it's easier. Now, so you don't punt anyway, Matt, so that's your thoughts on it, but auction, yes, it's fine to punt. The dynasty part of it is where it becomes difficult, because in a seasonal redraft league, yeah, you can punt because you sort of know what's happening, but you don't know how the winds are going to blow throughout a dynasty. So, yes, I still think that you should punt. That's still the way that I would look at it, but it probably have to be less aggressive. It's really hard to go for, say, like a hardcore 3 or 4 category punt in a dynasty, because things could change and really, really ruin you, and then impact what you do in terms of rookie drafts the following season. But I would still look to build a team in a certain way. Now, whether that's just I'm just ignoring my percentages, I'm ignoring my field goal percentage, I'm going really thin on point guards, and then say you end up with the first pick in a rookie draft, and you know, the comprehensive number one guy is going to be a point guard, trade that off, get the next guy's next three number one picks, get yourself the second pick or the third pick or whatever, and trade down and use it to your advantage. I think it's not as easy to do in a dynasty league because of that, you know, foresight you've got to have throughout the years, and that's really hard to do. It is still possible, but just don't be as aggressive with it, because that can really put you in a hole. But you can use it to your advantage in terms of the leverage you can get by having different values on guys, and that's where the beauty of punting comes into it for me.
If you're in doubt, what I would say is go ahead and draft the best team possible, and then it gives yourself the most amount of options in terms of pickups, in terms of trades, and then you can really study your team, study the competition and the other guys in your league, and say, okay, if I do want to go down that punting road, which categories am I going to concentrate on? And then if you've got, you know, someone who's really poor at field goal percentage, but the rest of you guys are good, go ahead and trade him for something else that's going to benefit your team. So
that's absolutely spot on. If you're
down, draft the best team possible. Don't be afraid to go that best player available route. In the draft.
And that's a really good point about punting and drafting in general, is that you can punt whatever you want, but you always got to be reassessing what you're doing. You've always got to be reassessing your team. And the amount of times I've gone and punted a category, and then halfway through the season with some free agent pickups, I've gone, okay, well, maybe, you know, this category, if I just make one move here, this category goes from being something that I was punting before to being something that's a strength. And this other thing hasn't worked out, so I'm just going to readjust what I'm doing. And you can readjust on the fly, and you can do exactly that with what you've suggested. Just go sort of get who you think is going to be the guys, whether you're looking to build for 3 years in the future, whether you're looking to win now this year. Do what you need to do. Look how your team plays out. Okay, oh, now I've got, you know, I'm at 75% average for my free throws. That's not good enough. But it's being brought down by one guy who's a 60% guy and doesn't bring other things out. Maybe I can trade him off for someone, get myself more competitive in free throws, or just really reassess it. Because if you lock yourself in at a punt, it doesn't necessarily mean you're locked into that for this season, the next three seasons. You can adjust. That's why I suggest don't go too aggressive on it, because it limits your ability to adjust it. And maybe to adjust it takes, you know, a good 2 years if you go just really hard on it. But there is a way around it. So I think I like your suggestion there as well, Matt, is just see how things play out, and then you can make an adjustment a month into the season, 2 months into the season, or even if you're going with a set plan, just don't go too hard on it. That's the way that I'd be looking at attacking it, I think.
So even like last season, if you've drafted, you built a punt blocks team, and then all of a sudden you get a Hassan Whiteside sitting on the waiver wire, and you think, well, I can pick him up, but unfortunately his 2.5-3 blocks a game aren't really going to help me because I've got no other shot blockers. So just open the team up a little bit, draft across the board. I know I use the term like a balanced team, like a roto build, and then it's going to give you more options through the season.
Well, I did that, Matt. I punted blocks in the league. Hassan Whiteside became available. I picked him up, ended up not punting blocks, and ended up coming second in that league anyway, and it was a pretty big money league, so I ended up, you know, doing all right out of that. And it worked out pretty well because I was able to adjust it on the fly. And again, a common misconception with people punting is that people think you're going out there to deliberately be bad in one category, but that's not what it's about at all. So I went out and punted blocks. I just didn't look for blocks with guys. My blocks were still okay. They were maybe 0.6 a game or 0.7 a game. I added Hassan White, so they went to like one a game, and all of a sudden I was top two in blocks from the addition of one guy. I just didn't go out and overvalue guys based on that category. And it's not about I need to get guys who are horrible at blocks. It's like, I don't care what you do in blocks. It's more what you're going to do for me in the other categories. And if it ends up that being that your blocks aren't too bad, then so be it. You'll win it some weeks. It's not about being as bad as you can in one category. It's about being as good as you can in a more limited range of categories. That's the difference that I think some people get a little bit confused about. It's not, you don't get a point for being the worst in a category. You just want to be stronger in the other ones. And I think that whether you draft with a punting strategy in mind or whether you draft with a balanced idea in your head, at some stage that thought process has to come into your mind at all times. I need to strengthen this area. I need to strengthen that area. And it's always in your head. You're not looking to be average in every single category no matter what you're doing. You always want to give yourself strengths depending on the way things are playing out. And it's always good to have a little bit of flexibility there as well. All right. Jackie Dalich. Big Shaktus Jackie Dalich on Twitter. So many names, get confused. Do you think Michael Kidd-Gilchrist could be this year's Jimmy Butler? Matt.
No, he's not going to be this year's Jimmy Butler. I'm not a big Michael Kidd-Gilchrist fan in general. Now, last season, across the whole season, he averaged 11 points, 7.5 rebounds, 0.7 blocks, 0.5 steals. So nothing standing out there. 46% from the field, 70% from the free throw line. So what?
I'm losing you.
1-1. Josh, if you've got them handy, I should have brought them up. I think he was sort of 12 points, 8 rebounds. As I said, nearly a block and a steal per game. His efficiency did increase. So
I've got his numbers. You dropped out a bit. Were you saying his post All-Star numbers? Is that what you want?
Can you just read
them? Yeah, I've got it. So he's at 12.2 points, 8.2 rebounds. He's at 0.6 steals, 0.9 blocks, and he shot 48 from the field and 77 from the line. Now, 48 and 77 are fantastic. Like, they're some really, really good numbers, really good solid percentages. When at times, like the season before, he was a 61% shooter from the line. And so he got it up to a significant number, and his field goals, he's a horrible shooter, but he still shot a really good percentage. His rebounds were fantastic for a small forward. 8 rebounds from a small forward is awesome. And what he needs to do, and this could come, is he needs to translate his awesome defense into statistical defense that we count in fantasy leagues, because he's a fantastic defender. I don't think there's many people who would go, who would say that Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is not one of the top 10 wing defenders in the league, because I think he just is. But he just doesn't get numbers. Like, he doesn't get steal numbers, and he doesn't get block numbers, but he should be able to get these numbers. And I think at some point it's going to turn, and he's going to end up with 1.3 steals, 1.4 steals a game. He's going to end up at a block a game. He's never going to be a triple one guy, because he's basically never going to hit a three-pointer in his life. But that's fine. If he gives you 13 points and 8 rebounds, a steal, a block, and those awesome percentages, I think he's going to have a pretty big jump. Now, he's not going to jump into the top 20 like Jimmy Butler did. That's pretty much impossible, because he's never going to score like Butler did. He's not going to hit threes like Butler did. But what he's going to do is going to be really valuable. And I really do like Michael Kidd-Gilchrist coming into this season. I think with Nick Batum playing next to him, Batum can stretch the floor a little bit, and that'll allow Kidd-Gilchrist to play a little bit lower. If Frank Kaminsky's next to him, Kaminsky can go out and play more perimeter, where Kidd-Gilchrist can come in and play more in the post and take shorter shots and shorter jump shots. And he's got not a bad mid-range shot as well. So I really think things are going to work a little bit better for him this season. Hopefully he starts to get more minutes, which we saw again down the stretch as well. I'm really excited for him, but he's not going to be Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, I was going to say he should be one of those guys who can average a block and steal the game, because he has got that defensive attributes. The other concern that I have is his injury history. He's only had 62 and 55 games in his last two seasons, so I'd really like to see him play 70 and 75 games before I go and draft him. Just as a comparison, Josh, would you rather Al Farouk or Michael Kidd-Gilchrist this season?
I would rather Al Farouk, because he's not as good as a defender, but he'll get defensive stats in bigger bunches than what Kidd-Gilchrist does. He's not a better player than Kidd-Gilchrist, but I think that he gets those numbers. He gets good block numbers. He can get good steal numbers. He can get big rebound numbers. I think that I prefer him, but I do like Kidd-Gilchrist's upside.
Yeah, I'd definitely have Al Farouk over him. More defensive stats. I think he's got more of an opportunity there at that small forward position. I think they've got a few guys in terms of, like, Nick Batum can move over to small forward and probably a little bit safer there with those injuries. So Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, for me, not quite on my radar at the moment.
All right, let's get to the next question. Comes in from Darren Church, who's on Twitter at DC_0_happy. With rumours of Taj Gibson maybe being moved, where would the top three landing spots for him be, fantasy-wise? Okay, so we're looking at this, Matt, and going, if we could pick any team for Taj Gibson to go to, what are the best three teams that are going to maximise his fantasy value and make him be a definite top 100 guy? Had a bit of a look at it. I think the places I think that he would be really, really handy to go to, I think that Phoenix, because Marquise Morris isn't going to be there. We know that pretty much, guaranteed. So I think starting as a power forward in Phoenix would be something interesting. Toronto, they're crying out for a power forward. Now, if Marquise goes there, maybe that throws things off. And also threw the Pelicans in there, because I think that we've seen Taj play center a lot. When Joakim Noah goes down, he's not a big guy, but he could go in there. Omer Asik he's got a stiff back, and he's pretty much basically a stiff anyway. He's not a guy who really blocks many shots or does anything offensively. And I think Taj would be a really interesting fit there alongside Anthony Davis. Now, they did just invest big money in Omer Asik, but it doesn't mean they can't trade him. The best one to me is the Raptors, though, if he heads across there, because Patrick Patterson's not great. Jonas Valanciunas is not an elite defender, and I think Gibson could have a really significant role there. How did you see it?
I agree with two of those teams. I had Phoenix as well. probably not the perfect fit next to Tyson Chandler or Alex Len, but in an up-tempo offense, I think he could work. As you said, Markieff Morris highly likely won't be playing much with the Suns this season. I had New Orleans as well. He could be a great fit there next to Anthony Davis and even defend like the normal center and keep Davis at the four. The other two teams I had down, maybe at an Indiana, they're crying out for front court depth. Yeah, so maybe a guy who could play alongside Miles Turner. And the other one who are also crying out for a power forward is Washington. It'd be an upgrade over Nene. Not a bad fit next to Marchand Gortat. And I think in the pick and roll situation with John Wall, Gibson could do some damage there with the Wizards.
Yeah, so there are a number of situations where he could go and put up some numbers. It all depends, obviously, on how things work out in real life and to who the Bulls are going to get back. If they do, in fact, move him at all, it might not be him that they move. It might be Noah that they move. It might be Gasol that they move. I think we're pretty much guaranteed it's not going to be Mirotić that they move. But any of those other guys could move around. Abe Froman, who's on Twitter at the famous Nick H. I think Scrabble, and that's Giannis Antetokounmpo, is going to take a big leap this year. What do you guys expect out of him, Matt?
I expect a massive season. Everything in line is just the planets are aligning. Josh, we've got the third-year breakout rule. He's bigger and stronger than last year. I've seen some highlights of him playing for Greece in the off-season. He's bulked up a little bit more. He's on a young team full of talent and potential who, as a team, they're going to improve again. Giannis as an individual will improve again. He can play anywhere from shooting guard to center. I think he's going to play a lot of power forward early in the season as Jabari Parker comes back from injury, which I think that'll help Giannis playing closer to the basket, helping with his defensive stats and his rebounds. So for me, there's no reason why he can't push sort of 15 points, 7 or 8 rebounds, 1.2 steals and blocks. I think his efficiency will improve again. For me, he's a definite top 50 player and could very well sit inside the top 30 as well come the end of the season.
See, I'm a little... I love Giannis. I've loved Giannis for ever since he basically entered the league. But the hype is always seeming to exceed his production. And that's the thing that worries me about him this season. You say that you think he's a definite top 50. I would not want to spend a top 50 pick on him myself. And that means I probably won't end up drafting him. I think he's probably a 55 to 60. And I just think that, yeah, he'll get better and he'll be great and he'll be fantastic to watch. I just think his fantasy value won't quite jump that high yet. I think the addition of Munro, while it makes the team better, might also just be there's another guy there, another good player there that might impact his numbers. He's definitely going to have an improvement, no doubt. But he was like the 93rd ranked player in my head-to-head rankings last year. So that's not all that great. Now, for him to jump up and halve that number it's possible. The third year jump is real and it's big. I'm a little bit worried that he's not going to get himself into the top 50. And that means I'm basically not going to end up owning him anywhere unless I just decide to go completely against what I've said here when I really break down all the numbers. But in a gut feel sort of thing, I'm thinking that he's probably going to end up lower in the rankings than what his ADP ends up being.
Have you got his ADP handy from our listener leagues at the moment? I know he's been going sort of fourth round on average, but have you got ADP there?
I will bring it up. Now, I haven't updated it for the last day or two, but I'll give you the rough numbers of where it sort of was at. Now, this is really
interesting. I got him in our listener league that you and I are both in. I got him at 59, which thought was a complete steal. I was actually considering him the pick before where I took Greg Munro at, I think it's 38 off the top of my head or whatever it was. So I was seriously considering him in the fourth round. Fell to the fifth, I'm laughing.
Okay, so he's the Giannis under the coupon. Now, his ADP numbers are set from the listener league because he's been drafted in all 12 leagues. Now, his ADP is 42. The highest he was picked at was 24, which is just ludicrously high to me. I don't know who that was, but that seems it's definitely a gamble. I think that feels way too high. And the lowest, Matt, was you at 59.
Thank you.
Yes. A couple of guys, he went at 55 in another league, 50 in one more league. Outside the top 50, I'm more than happy to do it. But these guys at 24, 25, 28, that's wait, is that's too rich for you even?
Yeah, that's too early for me. 42, not a bad ADP. That's about where I've I've got him ranked at the moment. Outside 50 bargain, inside top 40, a little bit too early for me, but it could pay off. It could be.
I could, you know, definitely.
You win your league on.
Well, here's a question now. You probably have already answered this, but Giannis Antetokounmpo, Andrew Wiggins, Chandler Parsons, all wing players. Who's the one that you take first?
Yeah, definitely still Giannis for me. Those defensive stats that Andrew Wiggins doesn't bring to the table. He doesn't hit a three, doesn't assist, doesn't steal, doesn't block. His efficiency was poor last season, so there's still question marks around Andrew Wiggins' game. Chandler Parsons, I'd like to see him have one big season before I get back on him and draft him. I like the threes. I like some assists from the small forward position. But Giannis for A, the all-round game, and B, the ceiling potential that he brings.
Now, I think that all those guys should probably be at this point outside the top 50. I wouldn't be shocked if Parsons ends up having the best season out of those three guys. But I would still probably take Giannis marginally first. But again, it'd have to be outside the top 50 for me at this early stage when I'm looking at him, and definitely not inside the top 40. That's a lot too early for me. Now, Matt, Owen Daly started off the show with a question about a clarification and some definitions, and he's going to close out the show here as well. Actually, before we get into that, just a quick shout out to everyone in the listener leagues who has been going through their drafts. A lot of them have finished. A few of the other ones, due to some time zone issues, are going a little bit slow, but they're still getting through them. So everyone who's in those, and if you don't know what we're doing, it's 12 leagues of 12 players. So we've got 144 guys in these listener leagues, and what we'll be doing is at the end of the season, the winners of each league will get a spot on the podcast to have a bit of a chat on one of the episodes. And they also get to go into a Champions League for next season, where so the winners of all 12 leagues will then play in a league alongside you, me and you, Matt, into a 14-team Champions League for next season. So that's what all those guys are playing at. And a few guys really standing out with some of their tweets, especially a big shout-out to Robert Downey Jr., a.k.a. Starks Industries. He's been putting out some big tweets. You've been seeing what he's been doing, Matt?
Is he the Iron Man guy?
It's hashtag Iron Man Blast. That's him.
And he sent out an email this morning saying, thanks, hashtag Iron Man. Who is it? He may be revealed soon. I'm not sure whether this is Iron Man or Gossip Girl.
Oh, yes. I hope it is Gossip Girl. That would just really tie everything together. Not that I've ever watched the show, but I've heard of it. That's the closest I can come to it.
You were telling me before about Serena and Blair and all the issues they've got there. So, I don't know. I'm throwing it out there, Iron Man. Are you Gossip Girl?
I mean, you need to reveal yourself at some point, because the intrigue is way too high on your secret identity. I know, you know what? Iron Man revealed himself. He revealed who he was. It's time for you to get out there and reveal yourself, because you're one of the more entertaining personalities in the leagues with all your hashtag Iron Man bombs and blasts and Iron Man loves you and Iron Man is your hero and all that sort of gear that's out there basically every single day. So I do appreciate you. You're throwing all that stuff out there. Now, back to Owen Daly, who has a couple more questions. And Owen's questions are very specific. I feel that he might have a draft starting very soon. Can you throw out a few names for small guys that are undervalued because they don't get points and assists? I usually punt those two categories. I'm going to throw out two names to start things off. Patrick Beverley is basically the number one guy for me in that situation as a point guard, especially, who doesn't get assists. Now, Ty Lawson's probably going to affect him, but I think Beverly's still going to get a big chunk of minutes for his defense. He hits threes. He rebounds the ball really aggressively. He can get steals as well. So Beverly's a guy there as well. Courtney Lee is an interesting guy. He's coming into a contract year. He gets a lot of opportunity in Memphis. Doesn't necessarily always take it, but in a situation where he doesn't give you assists, but he can give you some nice efficiency numbers, so percentages, he can hit threes. And the last time that he was coming into a contract year, he had a bit of a bump. He had probably his best season. So that's worth bearing in mind. And that's something that when you look at guys in contract years and you look at when they've had their previous contract years, if they've able to lift their rating and lift their output in those years before, maybe it's a trend. So Courtney Lee is more of a late-round guy. Beverly's a late-round guy as well. But Lee's more of a flyer, but he's not a guy. He gets a huge amount of points, but can hit some threes, can get some rebounds, can get some steals, and he's got nice efficiency numbers as well. Who do you like there?
This is actually a really difficult question because there's not too many guys who don't score or don't get assists. Like, if we're looking at the backup point guys, we've got like Dennis Schroeder, we've got Mo Williams, Aaron Brooks scores, even Devin Harris, Pat Bev, as you mentioned, Rodney Stuckey's a scoring guard, Grievous Vasquez. Like, it was really tough. A couple of names I've got in terms of low scoring, so if they're not going to score, you need to be doing other things. We're looking at steals, so that brings in Tony Allen. Yep. One of those one cat guys who you can plug in there at the shooting guard position. He's going to really help you out. The other guy I had was Isaiah Cannon at Philly. Probably a little bit more of a scoring guy, but we'll get you threes and steals. And the same again with CJ McCollum there in Portland. He's going to be threes and steals as well. As obviously, you're still going to get some good points. But, yeah, it's really hard. And that's another reason, once again, why I don't like punting, because you're just giving up too much overall value to find a guy who suits your couple of categories or suits some needs. So there's a few guys Owen, if hopefully that helps you out.
Yeah, so the way that Owen's looking at it here is the way that you should look at it. You don't want to go, I'm not drafting point guards only that don't get points or assists. You want guys who are undervalued because they don't get them. So you'll be able to get them a couple of rounds later than where, or you're able to snag them with your, you might have them valued as a 10th round guy, but other teams might have them valued as a 13th round guy. So you can then get them in the 12th. You've got yourself a bargain and you've just snuck in before everyone else. And that's the way that I see that Owen's approaching this. He's not specifically going out and I need to get guys who suck at assists. I just want to know where I can get the value from guys who suck at assists. Another name that came to my head just as we were talking then is Corey Joseph. We don't know exactly what role he's going to play up in Toronto, but he's a pretty aggressive rebounding guard. He shoots a pretty high field goal percentage as well. His game is not predicated on big scoring or big assist numbers, so he's another name there. Owen's next question is, I need a few three-point specialists that hit free throws and don't turn it over much. Is there anyone you think will suddenly start hitting two threes a game? Now, I've got a list of guys here who could start doing that. Lou Williams, Trey Burke, Ryan Anderson, who's definitely an out-of-position guy, but basically all he does is hit threes and hit free throws. He doesn't offer really anything else to the fantasy table. CJ Miles, Isaiah Cannon, who we mentioned before, and that's all he's going to do. And Bojan Bogdanovic is another player who hit his free throws at a pretty high clip, and he's probably getting forgotten about by a lot of people, but he could have a significant role for the Nets this season with Darren Williams out of town. Do you duplicate any of those names?
I did, and then got a couple more for you. Don't forget about Aaron Brooks in Chicago. Yep. Only a matter of time before Derrick Rose gets injured. So Aaron Brooks is one of those guys, stepped in last year, can hit a three, shoots 80-something percent from the free throw line. He's a really good option. KCP at Detroit hitting threes again. Gerald Green off the bench if Dwayne Wade gets injured. OJ Mayo off the bench for Milwaukee. Ben McLemore and Bellinelli in Sacramento. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, Patty Mills. He is going to get some pretty big minutes, I feel, this season behind Tony Parker. Popovich will just try to get Parker through the season. It wouldn't surprise me if Tony Parker only plays maybe 25 minutes. Maybe Josh bring up what he played last season, but Patty Mills could have a career high in minutes. You know, he loves to just bomb it from deep, so he could be a guy who could be around that 1.5, 2 threes per game. So sort of maybe looking at 14, 16 team leagues, Patty Mills could be your guy there.
Now, look, before Patty Mills had the shoulder injury, this is not Australian bias by any stretch, before he had the shoulder injury in 2013-14, he was a standard league guy for his ability to go out there and score and hit threes. He was well above Corey Joseph on the depth chart. Now, he didn't come back until January this year, missed the first chunk of the season, could never really get going. Joseph held a lot of those backup minutes, but Joseph is gone, and Mills said he's the primary backup anyway. So with no Bellinelli and no Joseph, he's going to have to play a pretty big role. And yeah, I think he's going to be a guy that, yeah, a couple of weeks in, he's going to be one of the hottest free agent ads. And he could almost definitely be a top 100 guy for his ability to score and hit threes and those percentages there as well. Now, you mentioned Kentavious Caldwell. Oh, back to, sorry, Tony Parker played less than 29 minutes a game last year.
Yeah, and wouldn't surprise me to see that down around 25, 26 minutes a game this season.
Yeah, no, he's definitely declining slightly. Now, you mentioned Kentavious Caldwell-Pope before. He does hit threes, but he's not a good free throw shooter, so that might rule him out of what Owen needs there. Last question, and Matt, we'll wrap it up on this question as well. Owen says, last year I was all over Mirza Teletovic. Wes Johnson, KJ McDaniels, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope as my late-round flyers. It didn't really work out for various reasons. Can you see any of them taking a step forward this year? Mirza Teletovic in Phoenix, what do you think?
He is a sneaky, deeper league guy coming right into fantasy calculations now with the Markieff Morris situation.
Definitely.
Pretty much him or TJ Warren or PJ Tucker there at power forward. He's the best fit, not in terms of the Suns, but playing next to Tyson Chandler and Alex Len. He had some really big games last season with Brooklyn Nets, and then had, I think it was a heart or
issue. He had the same issue as Chris Bosh. He had the lung blood clot in his lung.
Lung issue. Lungs, heart, that's all in the same region.
Yeah, that's how anatomy works, I think, Matt.
You're
a doctor, aren't you? Lungs and heart.
Pretty much. Yeah, close. Teletovic, another threes guy, can rebound the ball as well. Wes Johnson, no, not enough minutes for me there at the Clippers. No, KJ McDaniels, no. He's buried in Houston's rotation. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist was spoken about. KCP, still don't mind him there at Detroit.
No. KCP's heading into his third year as well, so he's up for that third-year bump. Stan Van Gundy gave him such a massive leash last year and said, just go out, shoot as much as you want, play as many minutes as you can. And I don't see it changing this year. Yeah, Stanley Johnson's going to play, but I think that he'll play some backup two, he'll play some three. Jody Meeks will probably be the biggest loser there rather than KCP. KCP's a top eight pick from 2 years ago. I think he's going to get plenty of opportunity to run with Stanley Johnson. That's going to be the future of their wings, is Johnson and KCP on there. So I think Caldwell Pope is in line for a big jump. Now, he's got to improve his ability to get stats apart from threes and scoring. He's got to improve his field goal percentage. He has to improve his free throw percentage. He needs to start getting something happening in terms of getting rebounds and assists. And he's an awesome defender, and those steal numbers could come up as well. And he could get 1.5, maybe push to 2 steals, which is not completely out of the realms of possibility. And then he becomes a really, really interesting fantasy guy. So I agree with all your takes on those guys. We talked about Michael Kidd-Gilchrist already before. Matt, I reckon that's it, unless something has snuck into the mailbag late that I haven't seen. I reckon we're all done for today's show. What have you got to plug? What have you got coming up?
I have some articles in the works, so I'm hoping they'll be out early September. I've got a series of articles, so hopefully the plan is to release one every week during September. We'll see how that goes. And I'm also working on something a little bit different. It's a question that you and I know other fantasy guys get asked a lot at this time of the season. And I've been doing some work on that. So hopefully you'll see that in the next few weeks as well. I won't tell you what it is. Otherwise, you'll probably go and spoil it and write an article about it. But yeah, there's one. Watch this space.
Very, very cryptic there, Matt. What was I going to say? I don't remember what I was going to say then.
You're doing some work around contract years, I believe.
Yes, I am. I don't know when that's coming out. It is finished. I've got an article I've written about contract year players. All the people who are going into the last year of their contract, that is done. I've also done an article on unconventional stats. So players who get out of position stats, big men who get assists, hit threes and are awesome at free throw percentage, guards who are aggressive with blocks and get rebound numbers and shoot a high field goal percentage. And those sort of things can be a really key thing in terms of building your teams. Getting those out of position stats can be a real key factor, because normally when you're anticipating or building your team, guards, they're going to hurt my field goal percentage. But if you get a guard who shoots a big percentage, like Goran Dragic is over 50% from the field last year, it just gives him that little bit of an extra bump. So I've got an article of that ready to go as well, which will go up on RotoWire at some point, same as the contract year piece that I have written. In terms of podcasts coming up, we've got Gabriel Harbour coming up on the weekend from Roto Grinders, and you know him on Twitter at Crazy Gaby. He's coming on to talk some daily fantasy sports with just an overarching discussion on daily fantasy and strategies and techniques and all that sort of stuff. Mark Roberts is coming on next week. We're going to do a podcast. It's going to be on Tuesday regarding position battles and rotations in the NBA and what key ones we see that we need to watch play out over preseason. They're the next two shows that are coming up. Matt, where can everyone find you on Twitter?
Yep, find me on Twitter at SmanSports. So follow me over there. Send through any fantasy basketball questions and I will get back to you.
That sounds like a good plan. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, as I mentioned, YouTube. You can subscribe on YouTube, and you can watch us do this stuff live and chime in with any questions that you have there as well. Make sure you're subscribing to the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher or on Cross on Audio Boom or anywhere where you find it, and help it grow. The growth lately has been absolutely astronomical, so I thank everybody who has been listening and just finding the podcast for the first time. It is much appreciated. As I said at the start, go out there and just smash iTunes and just leave reviews. Everybody go and leave a review all at once so that iTunes doesn't know what to do with itself. That would be really, really appreciated.
Has your mum left any more reviews lately?
No. You're only limited to one per person. So unless people just want to go out and pretend they're my mum, they can go out there and put a few more reviews. But she hasn't left any reviews on the US iTunes store, much with her ability to get past geo blocking and things like that. She's a bit of a technologically savvy woman. Matt, I think we're done. Is that it? Anything else you want to add?
I think that's it. The Aussies are none for 12, so we are flying.
Yes, that's a great start. And for everybody who that made no sense to, I apologize. One thing that is coming up is in September, the team preview series of podcasts will be coming out. Did it last year, doing it again this year. 30 podcasts, 30 teams. We break down each team individually. That will be coming with some new guests, some first time guests, some big name guests, some exciting people. Including Matt. Matt will be on for a couple of teams as well. So that's going to be happening throughout September. So look forward to those coming out. Matt, thank you once again for coming back on the show.
Thanks, mate. Talk to you soon.
No problem. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. See ya.